This Week in Agriculture is a production of the Red River Farm Network. With a look at this week in the markets, I'm Jamie Dickerman. Pro Farmer estimating the 2026 U.S. corn crop at 15.3 billion bushels. That compares to the latest USDA estimate of 16 billion bushels. The soybean crop is in line with the last USDA forecast, with U.S. production estimated at 4.57 billion bushels. Most recent USDA soybean production estimate is 4.51 billion. Pro Farmer forecasting the average corn yield at 173.2 bushels per acre and the average soybean yield of 53.3 bushels per acre. In Friday's report, USDA put the number of cattle on feed at 11.1 million head. That's up 2% from a year ago. Placements down 11% year over year, and marketing's down 7%. The placements and marketing figures, record low. Grain markets picked up some momentum after the Pro Farmer Crop Tour numbers became public. Top Third Marketing Senior Advisor Ed Dugan.
Pro Farmer Crop Tour, that's all anybody wants to talk about. You know, the yield number, not surprised. I wasn't surprised they came in lower than the USDA. Yeah, I'm surprised they came in 7.5 bushels lower than the USDA. There was also a Pioneer Seed Tour of Iowa yesterday that came in with some pretty lofty numbers. I want to say it was 228 or something like that for Iowa State yield. Now, you know, that number was just a smidge under where they were last year. You know, Pioneer's trying to sell seed here. I don't know that I believe those numbers that crop's that big in the state of Iowa, but we shall see.
Total Farm Marketing Senior Advisor Naomi Bloom says the trade got quiet after the recent market swings this week in the grains while digesting those Pro Farmer numbers.
Kind of feels like day trading to me. There hasn't been any specific fresh news today. So when you compare today's price action to yesterday, I would coin it as an inside trading day. So we're waiting to see if there's any fresh news which would justify any new price highs in these grain markets, keeping an eye on NVIDIA and AI and what that's looking like, and of course the Middle East and the Black Sea region. So if we don't get any fresh news soon, we might see a simple pullback in the marketplace.
AgMarket.net's Tyler Schau said renewed attacks on Black Sea grain infrastructure added support to the wheat market.
There was some attacks again in the Black Sea region, and one of the largest Russian grain terminals. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name, but they're saying heavy damage and some attacks. Going to take several months for that grain terminal to become operational again. So it takes a lot of the export capacity out. That's pushing wheat higher. That's kind of helping corn. And then you had some reports out of Brazil saying that you might not see the increase in acres that you've seen over the last few years just because of the changing profit margins and elevated fertilizer costs.
Van Onen Company CEO Jim Emter says the rally also moved into an area where producers should think about managing price risk.
The thing we need to realize in a lot of these markets is we're getting to extremes. How do we measure extremes? I try to measure that off of standard deviation channels. When we start getting to standard deviation over linear regression, some will argue that a Bollinger Band can do the same thing. But again, we're getting to areas where we may need a cleanse before we can get that bigger extension. So that's what we're really zoning in on. We really feel from here in Dease corn to 552 December corn, this is the area over the next 20 cents where, you know, you might want to consider some risk management coverage. You know, could we have more upside down the road? Yes, but this is a level that we could pull back from in through harvest and then see bigger markets down the road. And we've got to manage those risks here as we work ahead.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Jamie Dickerman on the Red River Farm Network. With a look at this week in the news, I'm Jamie Dickerman. President Donald Trump announcing 300,000 metric tons of ground beef will be imported tariff-free for 90 days. Trump said the beef would be sold 25% below current market prices. Trump defending the decision when meeting with reporters at Andrews Air Force Base.
We want to get the beef prices down, so we'll get them down a little bit. And that's what people want, that's what the voters want, and that's what I want. The ranchers are great, they're my people. I love the ranchers, they've done a fantastic job. But they admit that we need a little help and in order to get the prices down. So that's what we're doing.
Trump facing backlash from Republicans and Democrats alike for the decision to import foreign beef. While voicing his opposition, South Dakota Senator John Thune noted he represents a beef-producing state that has four times as many cattle as people. National Cattlemen's Beef Association pushing back against the Trump administration's plan to bring more ground beef into the U.S. NCBA Executive Director of Government Affairs Kent Bacchus says increasing imports will not solve high beef prices.
We're not going to import our way to lower beef prices, and this is only going to prolong the issue, and it's going to send the message to the countryside, to producers, to hold off on rebuilding. And you know, that's unfortunate. We've got a robust tax code in place now that should empower a lot of producers to start expansion and encourage retention. But at this point, the more the government keeps sticking its nose into the market, you know, the harder it's going to be. This essentially, is just throwing cold water on the prospect of herd expansion.
Policy Solutions President Jay Truitt says the announcement created plenty of market reaction, but he questions how much it will change beef prices for consumers.
300,000 metric tons may sound like a lot to somebody. That's 20 to 24 days worth of supply. And you're really talking about the hot dog, frozen dinner, frozen pizza market, et cetera, some institutional trade, et cetera. It's kind of a nothing burger in some respects, but the reality is that it does set just this crazy precedent for us doing some really bizarre stuff inside of what is already a stressed market.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said progress was being made in last week's trade negotiations with the United States, but talks eventually broke down.
In recent days, the United States proposed new terms. They were uneconomic, unfair, and undermined the net benefits for Canada and called into question the reliability of any deal. In short, they asked too much and they offered too little.
New 50% tariffs on $20 million worth of Canadian products are now in place. Canada promises to retaliate dollar for dollar, with the retaliation taking effect September 8th. Trade talks between the neighboring countries fell apart just before midnight last Friday. As part of a deal, U.S. Trade Representative Jamieson Greer said the Trump administration was prepared to open formal negotiations with Canada on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Representatives of CHS, OCP North America, and government, part of a groundbreaking ceremony for a new phosphate fertilizer plant in Louisiana. CHS CEO Jay Deberton telling the Red River Farm Network this new project will provide CHS another way to supply fertilizer for its customers.
We don't screw around with it. We're going to produce it, put it on a barge, bring it up the river, put it on trucks and rail cars, and move it to North Dakota.
Construction will begin this fall. The plant should be operational in 2 years. Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Jamie Dickerman on the Red River Farm Network.
This week in weather, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network. Drought conditions worsened across much of North Dakota in the latest USDA drought monitor. About 96% of North Dakota is considered abnormally dry or in drought, roughly 75% of the state in moderate drought or worse, nearly 40% in severe drought or worse. In South Dakota, about 93% of the state considered abnormally dry or worse, including 76% in drought. Extreme drought remains the case in western South Dakota. About 46% of Minnesota considered abnormally dry or in drought. Severe drought has expanded to eastern Minnesota. We did see some severe storm activity early in the week. The big story came out of the Rugby area. Some reports of over 8 inches of rainfall over a 12-hour period. Crop conditions vary widely across the region. Gerald Nordic farms corn and soybeans near Rothsay, Minnesota, in the southern Red River Valley. He says his farm may still produce an average crop, but conditions can look dramatically different just a few miles away.
An average crop right on our farm, but you can go 2 miles away, and like I said, the corn didn't pollinate in a lot of fields, and it's just a lot of almost barren cobs. So planting date really made a difference. When this heat hit the corn, you can have the same variety that'll be filled to the tips and look good, and you can go someplace where it was planted 3 weeks different, and it's a total train wreck.
Pioneer field agronomist Kevin Sinner says the hot, dry weather pushed some corn maturity faster than normal.
Corn, you'll see, you can pick out the dry, the sandy veins, the ridges, and things like that. The corn's already turned white in spots. So there'll likely be some lower test weight corn. We were doing some yield predictions and yield checks yesterday, kind of over towards the Faustin and Monoman area, and it kind of surprised me how good the corn looked there at times. And we were getting anywhere from, you know, if it was a late 70-day hybrid, we would get, you know, 140 to 150, which isn't surprising. But then when you get into the later day stuff, the 90, 91, 92-day stuff, our estimates were coming in anywhere from 175 to close to 190. So
there are some good areas close to the Wimbledon area. Mike Clemens says strong rainfall earlier in the summer helped carry his crop through a dry August.
Well, in our area, we had very good rains throughout the summer, and so it's looking really good in our area. But you get any other thing out of that 20-mile radius of our place, and things get pretty tough pretty fast. So we're kind of hopeful in our area we're going to have a pretty decent crop this year. But the thing is, we haven't had a lot of rain during the month of August here. Our last big rains were July 9th, but we had a lot of rain up to that point, so we were pretty saturated. So we've been living off of that pretty much the whole time.
The sugar beet crop has strong yield potential across the Red River Valley, but dry weather is beginning to limit growth. American Crystal Sugar Company General Agronomist Joel Hastings says the crop remains healthy.
It has great yield potential. We have a nice shaped root. They're healthy. The canopy's healthy. So that's good. But one of the things that's really becoming the dominant factor influencing our potential is the drought we're experiencing. So we're seeing most districts experiencing various levels of drought stress with only localized rainfall giving relief.
As of Monday, 62% of the spring wheat across the country had been harvested, up from 41% the previous week. I'm Don Wick. This Week in Weather.